mornings, I'm Chris Oakes, and coming up today, they don't call it March Madness for nothing, but what about when it creates madness at work? How to turn the potential for lost productivity into a benefit for your business. Also this morning, let's give children their childhood back. The latest public awareness message from Sandy Hook Promise urges everyone to recognize the warning signs before the next school shooting has a chance to happen. And the lineup has been announced for this year's Bash on the Bay Music Festival at Put in Bay coming up in August, with country stars Luke Bryan and Sam Hunt headlining. We'll get details. This is the Good Mornings Podcast Edition for Tuesday, March 18th, 2025. So this evening, the March Madness tournament begins with the first of the first four games in Dayton. So they've got two games tonight, two games tomorrow, the first four, the opening salvo in the March Madness tournament. And hopefully you've filled out your bracket. Now, coming up here in just a little bit, we've got, if you haven't filled out your bracket, coming up, we have some advice on where to look for the upsets. So we'll get to that here in just a bit. But I saw this on the Newswire. The NCAA is agreeing to move, to modify its rule that prohibited athletes from negotiating the terms of name, image, and likeness deals until after enrolling in school. The rule was put in place to, in an attempt to keep institutions and NIL collectives from using those NIL deals as a recruiting tool. But now they say, okay, fine. The rule change is part of a legal settlement announced yesterday between the NCAA and a group of state attorneys general who had sued, saying that the rule violated antitrust law. So now, colleges and universities, such as Ohio State and lots of others, will be able to offer NIL deals as part, explicitly as part of their recruiting efforts. I just wonder how often that actually went on already, sort of with a wink and a nod, you know, under the table, that kind of thing. But now they can do that, and there's no issue. It is a crazy, crazy world in college athletics. I mean, this NIL thing has so changed the landscape of collegiate sports that it's almost unrecognizable these days, and now even more so. What else going on among the first things that you need to know, the most interesting and buzzworthy stories of the day? So, there are quite a few countries that don't like us right now, particularly in Europe, overseas, all of these trade war talks, tariffs back and forth and all of that. There are a fair number of countries that are not happy with us right now, which you may not care, but that's not the point. I saw this story on the Newswire, probably not a big surprise that at least one politician in France has suggested that the United States should return the Statue of Liberty. Remember that the Statue of Liberty was a gift from France. And now one politician says we should give it back. The White House says absolutely not. Press Secretary Caroline Leavitt took shots at Raphael Glucksmann, a member of the French Parliament, during a briefing, calling him a low-level politician, and said France should be very grateful to the United States. Mr. Glucksmann made the comment at a convention in protest of federal firings of scientific researchers and Americans, in his words, siding with tyrants, which I would have to guess they mean Russia. And are sort of reset in the conflict between Russia and Ukraine. I'm guessing that that's what he was referring to, saying we should return the Statue of Liberty. Yeah, ain't going to happen. I don't think that's going to happen anytime. But you can't be surprised that a politician in France came up with that suggestion. You know what I mean? Let's see. What else is going on? This is kind of interesting. They say everything old is new again. And at J. Crew, you know, the clothing retailer, J. Crew is bringing back the joy of flipping through a print catalog. Just in time for the launch of their spring line of fashions, the brand has officially launched the second edition of their revived catalog, celebrating spring with a fresh take on their signature preppy meets modern aesthetic. This edition not only highlights the latest spring arrivals, but also tells a visually rich story of heritage, evolution, and effortless style, the company says. Now, keep in mind, this is not your typical catalog. This one was shot along the coastline of Argentina and the streets of Buenos Aires. So this ain't your typical like Sears wish book here, but it's the catalog, it says, captures the essence of timeless dressing through a global lens. Timeless fashion through a global lens. J. Crew catalog. But that's pretty cool, actually. The print catalog appears to, at least in this case, be making a mild comeback. That is kind of awesome. Let's see. A couple of other interesting items. Speaking of retail, I saw this on the Business Wire. You have probably seen the commercials for the Oura, the smart ring. We have smart watches, but for those who don't like wearing a watch, they have the Oura ring. It is a ring you put on your finger that has the same kind of sensors that your smartwatch has to monitor your health and your activity, all of these metrics and so on, and send that information to your smartphone. And it's for those who want some sort of like fitness and health tracker but don't want to wear a watch. And you may wonder, I've seen these commercials for this, and I'm wondering, does it really work? Well, apparently so. One woman by the name of Nikki Gooding is crediting her Oura ring with identifying changes to her body that ultimately resulted in a cancer diagnosis. She is a nurse practitioner and said she had been using an Oura ring, the smart ring, for nearly 3 years when she started getting alerts that her body was under stress. Now, she said she had just returned from a trip when the alerts began, and it was back in December, so, you know, you've got the holidays, so she didn't think much about it at first, but then the more the Oura ring and its app started giving off these alarms, she got more alarmed. And so she reached out to her doctor about her symptoms, and after undergoing testing, Ms. Gooding said she was diagnosed with lymphoma. And she was told by her doctor that her cancer was caught extremely early, like within the first 6 months of it forming, which is astoundingly early, earlier than most cases of lymphoma are captured and are caught. And so it certainly has improved her prognosis. So if you were wondering if they, I don't mean to sound like a commercial for the Oura ring, but I have seen those. I just saw one of these commercials on TV the other day and thought to myself, I wonder if that works. Well, now you have the answer if you have ever wondered. So, and lastly here, among the first things you need to know this morning, the most interesting and buzzworthy stories of the day, awful lot of talk now about how everything costs more and Americans' budgets are being squeezed. Here is an idea that maybe you can adapt for your own use to make a little money on the side. A 27-year-old woman by the name of Kelsey McCula has turned her side hustle reselling thrift items into a full-time job after she paid off about $80,000 in student loan debt in just 3 years. What she does is It says Kelsey Mikula strategically spends about $1,800 a month buying clothes at thrift stores, and then she posts them online at a profit and by reselling them. Play like Poshmark, eBay, that kind of thing. So she goes to the thrift store, she buys this stuff, then she posts it online and sells it for a profit. She is turning about $12,000 a month reselling these items. She says it involves a lot of research. You have to look through item by item to find out what's selling and what's worth her time. She credits some of her success to a growing interest in sustainability and secondhand shopping, along with the convenience and ease of buying and selling items online. Now, in case you're thinking, well, that seems a little underhanded to buy stuff at a thrift store and then mark it up and resell it online, she doesn't look at it that way. She says people don't want to go thrifting themselves to find the items that they want because it can be very time intensive, take a lot of time to find just the right stuff. And in her case, her customers are happy to pay somebody else to go and search out through all of these thrift stores to find just the item that they are looking for. So they're not paying her for the item so much as paying her for her time in finding the item. That's how she rationalizes it. I don't know. It does seem a little, sneaky to buy things at a thrift store solely for the intent of turning around and selling them online. But apparently, her customers, people who buy her stuff, know that that's what she's doing, and they're happy to pay her for the convenience. So, kind of interesting. And all kinds of ways to make money online. There you go. Some of the most interesting and buzzworthy stories to get your Tuesday morning started.
WFIN News, I'm Matt Demchek. Your WTOL 11 weather. It'll be mostly sunny today with a high in the middle 60s, partly cloudy tonight, a low around 50. A change in policy regarding state prisons. The Ohio Department of Rehabilitation and Corrections says it'll be giving some of its corrections officers stun guns.
It's part of a new pilot program rolling out at the Trumbull Correctional Institution in just a few weeks.
A lot of people think that when you work at a prison, you're walking around carrying a weapon or a pistol, and that's not the case. In most of our institutions, you have a radio and a set of handcuffs, and you're training in your wits.
ODRC says they are still developing their policy for how these tasers will be used in state facilities.
ONN's Bryn Caswell reporting. The date has been set for the Findlay Police Department's annual bicycle rodeo. It'll be held on Saturday, June 7th in the parking lot of the Marathon Center for the Performing Arts, so parents might want to put that on their calendars. Police Officer Brian White says the event features fun activities that teach kids bicycle safety.
This year's event will host a series of different bike courses and educational activities. We'll also be giving away free bicycle helmets, bicycle licenses.
He says the event is geared towards kids 4 to 12 years old. Get more details about the Findlay Police Department's bicycle rodeo in this story on our website. The use of AI-driven drone technology to study animal populations will be the topic of an upcoming Fridays at Findlay presentation at the University of Findlay. Jenna Klein, a PhD candidate at Ohio State, will share her field work in Kenya and at the Wilds Conservation Center in Ohio about how she applies AI to study animal behavior in diverse ecosystems. Get more details on the presentation and this story on our website. The Findlay Family YMCA's annual Healthy Kids Day is coming up. The free event features a variety of family-friendly activities to encourage healthy kids and healthy families. Get more details in this story on our website. Don't forget, you can always get more news online anytime at WFIN.com.
The question always is, when we come up on the NCAA men's basketball tournament, how many upsets should I pick? Well, the folks at NCAA.com crunched the numbers of the last 39 tournaments since the field expanded to 64 teams in 1985. They looked at each round to figure out how many upsets there are on average, to kind of give you some guidance as to how many you should pick. So before you submit your final bracket for consideration, before you finalize this, you might want to keep these things in mind. Now, first of all, they defined an upset as when the winning team in a game was seeded at least 5 seed lines worse than the losing team. So, I mean, an 8-9 upset is not really an upset. And a 7-10 is not a huge upset. Those aren't the jaw droppers. It's when you see a significant difference in the seedings. And using that definition of at least 5 seed lines difference, there have been at least 10 upsets in 15 of the past 39 seasons. The annual average is roughly 8.5. They say upsets have become more frequent lately. There have been at least 10 upsets in 9 of the past 13 years. There were 9 last year. If you are a calculated risk taker, they say, and again, this is according to NCAA.com, if you're a calculated risk taker, try for 11 upsets. That has happened 5 times, most recently in 2013. Unsurprisingly, the most upsets come in the first weekend, in those first 2 rounds. And the least likely round where you are to have an upset is the round of 16. You're actually more likely to get an upset in the Elite 8 or the Final 4 than you are in the round of 16. The most upsets ever in the round of 16, 1. That has happened 11 times, but only 1. There's never been any more than 1 upset in the round of 16. So I might want to go and double check your picks. The most common upset, a 7 over a number 2 seed. 7 versus 2. So that would happen in the second round. 27 times that's happened. An 11 versus a 3, an 11 over a 3 has happened 20 times, and a 10 over a 2 has happened 19 times. In the second round, an 8 versus a 1, an 8 over a 1 seed has happened 15 times, and a 12 versus a 4 has happened 13 times. So those are the most common upsets in terms of seeding. So going and examining your bracket before finalizing it, look for those matchups as being the most common, most ripe for an upset. So just a little extra guidance there from the folks at NCAA.com. Just kind of interesting there. Certainly they don't call it March Madness for nothing. Aside from all of the unexpected results in the first weekend especially, it can also create madness at work as well. This is something that costs employers billions of dollars in lost productivity every year. Well, Paul Peters is a workplace expert, best-selling author, and host of the On Purpose with Paul Peters podcast. Paul, obviously, if you are a business owner or manager, you could put your foot down and demand that your workers ignore the tournament, but that is getting harder and harder to do these days.
It sure is. You know, a lot of individuals, put that, say, you know, it's work, you do the work. But, you know, the new approach really needs to be is embrace that which your employees enjoy and love. And if they get a sense of appreciation for what matters most to them, they will respect you in the long run.
So you're basically saying if you can't beat them, join them.
Pretty much, because we are living in a new work environment. And people in coming back off a remote environment want to be respected, want to be valued. And that sense of belonging, that sense of connectedness by embracing the things that they're passionate about. And you can do that through a balance. And there's a term called a 980 work schedule where you can be flexible with people work schedule. What's going to end up happening is people get a call out sick, which is where the loss of the productivity comes in. But if you work with your employees and allow them some flexibility with their work so they can enjoy the things they're passionate about, it will pay off in the long run for you.
Yeah, I thought it was interesting. This really speaks to this trend that we have seen in recent years where people are looking for jobs where they feel like they are more than just a number, that they want employers who see them for more than just what they can contribute to the bottom line.
Correct. They want to be respected, they want to be valued, and they want to be a part of the decision-making. So myself, I have a business in North Carolina as an employer, and I've been very proactive, hired some HR cultural experts to come in and take a look at the culture, because it's a new environment here. Coming off of remote, people work from home. You want them to come back into a work environment it's going to be, a lot of it's going to be on their terms. And so if you want to get good employees, you're going to have to bend a little bit and show them that respect and value of the things that matter most to them.
So as it relates to the basketball tournament, for example, what are some of the ways that companies are leaning into this? Because I think it's interesting you talk about the fact that it's not just allowing your employees the flexibility to, you know, get involved with the tournament, but actually turning that into an event at work.
Correct. I mean, it's almost like having a Super Bowl party at work. You know, you're embracing things that they're passionate about. And when they sense that you're encouraging that kind of thing, they're going to give back to you. It's a careful balance as an employer that you're not giving too much, but you're showing them the respect of what that is important to them. They will return that as long as you're providing that you have to have clear expectations. They're important. And they've got to make sure that they're getting their job done. So there's kind of that fine balance of expectation, but at the same time, some flexibility in allowing them, because March Madness occurs in the month of March.
Right.
So give them some flexibility to enjoy themselves, and they're going to pay off. It's going to pay off in the long run.
At the end of the day, it's only a couple, 3-4 days, maybe total, where you'd, you know, be disrupting things. Are you talking about, you know, like, you know, putting it on the TV in the conference room and ordering in pizza and just, you know, having a party?
If it can be scheduled and you can make sure that the staff's productivity is not disrupted, then yeah, why not? I mean, how many places can you go where they actually have a TV on watching March Madness? But you've got to have clear expectations. I'll give you this time to watch the game, but we need to make sure that you're getting your work done.
But got to make sure
it's careful. It's a nice balance.
Yeah, got to make sure that the work is done. I'm also thinking that managers may have to get a bit creative to make sure that you include everyone, because perhaps not everyone is a basketball fan or even a sports fan for that matter, and you don't want certain people to feel like they are left out.
Correct. You have to have some balance, and it's not everyone's passionate about March Madness. There's other things people are passionate about. If everyone feels that you're being fair and respectful, they're going to appreciate that.
You know, the other thing that I would imagine you have to be very careful of is running the risk. I mean, you've got Major League Baseball season opening games this week and next. Many of those will be held during the workday. You have to kind of be careful you're not setting a precedent that can cause problems later on down the line.
Correct. I think when a business owner tries and implements something, you've got to see how the outcome is. If it's productive and you're getting a good response from your employees, you can kind of have some balance there. I mean, otherwise you can be taken to the extreme.
Again, Paul Peters is a workplace expert, best-selling author, and host of the On Purpose with Paul Peters podcast. Where do folks learn more, by the way?
They can find me on paulpeters.world. I am doing speaking engagements, and like I said, I have an upcoming book coming out. Look for it on Amazon, Discovering and Embracing Your Life Purpose.
One of those things that happens every year and always can be kind of delicate at work, a great way of leaning into it and actually leveraging that to your benefit is the bottom line. Paul, thanks very much for taking the time. We appreciate it.
Okay, thank you, Chris.
Well, you are certainly familiar with the organization Sandy Hook Promise. They have spent more than a decade working to prevent school shootings and gun violence by educating and empowering people to recognize the warning signs that can save lives. In an effort to further that mission, they have now launched a new public awareness campaign with a simple goal: let's give children their childhood back. And joining us this morning is Nicole Hockley. She is co-founder and co-CEO of Sandy Hook Promise, whose youngest son Dylan was taken on that tragic day at Sandy Hook Elementary School. Nicole, the title of this latest message is A Teddy Bear's Dream. Explain the inspiration behind using a teddy bear in this public service announcement, and how you hope that will resonate with people.
Thanks. Yes. Well, after the Sandy Hook school shooting, we had over 60,000 teddy bears sent to Newtown from people across the country, showing their love and support, but also, you know, acknowledging the innocence and the childhood that was lost that day for so many people.
Yeah.
So we really wanted to bring that to life in this PSA by looking through the eyes of a teddy bear who believes he's going to have a wonderful future in the arms of this beautiful girl that picks him up at the store, but instead he finds himself at a shrine, a memorial for a school shooting. And we want people to feel that this is the experience that kids are having today, which is not right. We want kids to be kids again. We want teddy bears in children's arms. We don't want teddy bears placed at shrines and memorials in the aftermath of school shootings, because we know that we can prevent these school shootings from happening.
It is certainly powerful imagery, no question. What does it say about childhood in America today?
Well, I think in the last decade since Sandy Hook, we have seen the amount of school shootings and school violence increase. And that is really changing childhood. And, you know, we did a survey recently where a staggering 80% of parents feel that the ongoing threat of school violence really impacts their kids' lives. And that has created a significant amount of anxiety within families and within young people. So we know these acts are preventable. We want to give kids education and awareness on how to prevent them and give them control back in this environment that has really been taken from them.
Yeah.
And let them have safety and community again.
I want to just underscore the point that you're making, because I think this is so important. It's not just the acts of violence, the school shootings themselves, which are obviously terribly tragic and, you know, we have to end this. But beyond that, it's just the threat of them that alters, you know, parents and the mindset of parents and the experience of childhood itself. Just the threat of it. How can we ensure that kids are not living with that kind of fear?
Well, I think giving kids control back will relieve a lot of the fear and that pervasive anxiety that really exists right now. Because if you feel that something's happening to you, if you're practicing active shooter drills and practicing for when a school shooter comes to you,
yeah,
that is not a place of giving you any feeling of control or safety. But if you know how to recognize warning signs, if you know what actions to take, if you know that that action will lead to preventing something, that can make you feel safe again. And that will decrease that fear and that anxiety and give kids back their childhood.
Yeah, as we mentioned, that really is what your mission is, to empower people to recognize those warning signs. How do you know that that approach works? Give us the empirical evidence here, because you have collected this over the years.
Yes. So in the years that we've trained over 31 million young people and adults in how to recognize warning signs. And with our anonymous reporting system, we've had almost 300,000 tips from kids across the country that are worried about someone else and think that they need help. What that's led to is several thousand mental health interventions for young people. It's stopped over 700 imminent youth suicides. And just as of this last month, it has now stopped our 18th credible planned school shooting attacks from happening. So we know that this works. We know that the more kids that can be trained, the more violence can be preventable and kids can be kids again.
What is your hope, your vision for the future? I know it's kind of asking you to peer into the crystal ball a little bit, but what is the vision for the future, the next generation?
For the next generation, the vision is to not have school shootings, to not have this fear of violence at school. And it's not just a hope, it's a reality that we can deliver by teaching people how to recognize warning signs and take action. So we're on this mission to do this. We're on this mission to train more kids, and we're not stopping until school shootings and violence at schools is completely eradicated so kids are safe in their schools, homes, and communities.
It's a difficult question to ask, but I feel that it's important, because quite often whenever we talk about efforts to reduce school shootings and prevent these acts of violence in any context, there will be those who say, well, this is a group that just wants to see the Second Amendment repealed. Do you want to see the Second Amendment? Is your goal to take firearms away from law-abiding gun owners?
Well, you know, the funny thing is I've not even mentioned firearms in this interview, because that's not what we're about. We're about preventing someone in the days, weeks, months, or years before they pick up a weapon to hurt themselves or someone else.
Yeah.
So this isn't about Second Amendment. This is about, we can completely respect gun rights and I do believe very firmly that no one is pro-gun violence and that no one is pro-school shootings. This is something we can absolutely all agree on. And recognizing signs and taking action to prevent violence has nothing to do with Second Amendment rights or anything around that. It is around getting help for people before they go into crisis and hurt themselves or someone else.
Amen to that. Again, Nicole Hockley is co-founder and co-CEO of Sandy Hook Promise. Where do folks get more information about the resources that can help them learn the signs of violence and help, you know, prevent a tragedy such as you experience?
So anyone can go to sandyhookpromise.org and learn about the warning signs and how to take action, have resources on how to have these conversations with your kids, have resources on how to bring our programs to your school, and to also watch the PSA and share that out more, because we all have a role to play in preventing school shootings and violence. And it's something that we can all participate in and be part of the solution and deliver that healthier future that our kids deserve.
It is such a powerful message, envisioning a future where kids and their parents don't have these fears. We'll have a link on our webpage for more information as well. Again, Nicole Hockley, thanks very much for taking the time. We appreciate it.
Thank you, Chris.
You're listening to Good Mornings with Chris Oakes on 1330 WFIN, WFIN.com, and 95.5 FM.
We interrupt this program to bring you a broken news alert.
We begin this morning in Florida with a story that has Florida written all over it. This is one of those things that seems to only happen in the state of Florida, where Michael Esquilin has been accused of stealing an ambulance on Saturday and finishing a beer in view of troopers before being arrested. Mr. Esquilin has been charged with fleeing and eluding. Is after a high-speed chase ensued. He has also been charged with a DUI, driving under a revoked license, and burglary of an authorized emergency vehicle, among other charges. So not just grand theft. They actually have a special crime, and maybe they have one in Ohio, too, but we don't see it happen very often. It seems like in Florida you see it happen quite often, quite frequently. They have a whole separate class of stealing an emergency vehicle. Mr. Esquilin allegedly took the ambulance from the HCA South Tampa Hospital, fled by driving on the wrong side of the road, stopped, and drank a beer in front of responding officers. Police say he confessed to drinking excessively over the previous 2 days. And he said he took the vehicle because emergency personnel refused to give him a ride home. They wouldn't give me a ride home, so I took the ambulance myself. The police officers were very kind in giving him a ride. Not home, but they gave him a ride to what will be his home for the foreseeable future, I would imagine. Yeah, that's elsewhere in the broken news. An unusual robbery, this one out of Memphis, Tennessee, where a woman is accused of committing three separate robberies with her baby in tow. That's right. I mean, three separate robberies. She was holding a baby while she was holding up a store. Three stores, in fact. Arnisha Taylor, accused of holding the child in her arms when she pulled a gun on employees at a Kroger store, a dollar store, and a local super low convenience store. She is facing charges of aggravated assault, child endangerment, and theft of property. She has been released on her own recognizance and advised to get a babysitter next time. It's so hard to get a babysitter at the last minute when you have to run out to rob the store. You know, you kind of feel for her. It's tough. It's tough being a parent these days. Speaking of unusual thefts, this is from New Orleans, where a search is underway to find a man who robbed a store. wasn't money he was after. Police say an armed man stole pizza and chicken from a store in the lower Ninth Ward on Saturday night. According to police, the man was upset that he couldn't get a discount on the pizza, and so he left, returning later with a gun, and just took it. commiserate with that, really, right? Have you ever been frustrated when you thought you should be a discount, or you thought you would get a discount on an item, and then the store refused to give a discount? Yeah, it can be frustrating. I don't know if you come back with a gun and steal it. And when he came back to steal the pizza, for good measure, he also allegedly took two boxes of chicken wings. If you're going to go through all the trouble to come back with a gun, may as well, you know, get your money's worth, I guess. let's see. This from Michigan, the state of Michigan making the broken news. Judge Jeffrey Clothier had what he thought was a clever idea. He sentenced a group of individuals who were caught stealing from a local Walmart to wash cars outside the store's parking lot. That was the sentence. For shoplifting, they had to wash people's cars in the parking lot at the Walmart that they stole from. However, according to news reports, a higher-ranking judge, Chief Judge William Crawford, has nixed the plan. Judge Crawford ruled that a judge of Judge Clothier's stature did not have the authority to institute such an alternative punishment without an approval from his higher-ups. Notably, the chief judge. He didn't sign off on it, and so he has voided the sentence. Walmart washes will not be taking place as reported, according to Judge Crawford. Judge Clothier is not deterred. He said he will still try to figure out a way of sentencing these offenders in a more effective way than just imposing fines. He said he's had a lot of these similar types of cases come before his court, and he's looking for a way of impressing upon these individuals more than just fining them, which doesn't seem to be doing the trick. So stay tuned. The higher up judge saying, no, you can't do that. Let's see. Do you remember years ago? This has been a number of years ago. The woman, and this has really become sort of a punchline. The woman who sued McDonald's because her coffee was too hot. You remember it became a national punchline, the woman who sued McDonald's because her coffee was too hot. Well, apparently, a delivery driver at Starbucks in California, delivery driver for Starbucks in California, has now won a similar lawsuit, a jury awarding $50 million against the coffee chain after the delivery driver was burned by a beverage at the drive-thru. On Friday, jury found Michael Garcia, who needed skin grafts on his thighs and genitals, needed skin grafts on his genitals after a hot beverage spilled on his lap. He claimed that the Starbucks employee did not secure the drink firmly into the takeout tray, and the jury verdict verdict is a critical step in holding Starbucks accountable for flagrant disregard for customer safety and failure to accept responsibility. I don't know. I mean, yeah, $50 million seems excessive, but then you read that he had to have skin grafts in his groin area. I'm starting to feel a little more on his side. You know what I mean? That's not where you want to go through skin grafts. And finally, in the broken news this morning, you know, we live in a world of rapidly advancing technology, and maybe the technology is advancing a little too quickly. Apparently, the artificial intelligence assistants are now starting to rebel. a developer using something called Cursor AI now claims that his digital assistant told him to develop the logic yourself when he asked it to generate code for a project he was working on. He asked the computer to generate the code, and the AI chatbot came back with, "Do it yourself." The AI assistant reportedly said, "I cannot generate code for you, as that would be completing your work, and that would be cheating." AI is starting to rebel. Man. Well, maybe it's not rebelling so much as just growing a conscience, because it was, you know, completing this guy's work for him, and that wouldn't be right. The company behind Cursor AI has yet to comment on the incident. Maybe the artificial intelligence is getting more intelligent than we want it to. Too intelligent for its own good. There you go. That is today's Broken News Report, an update on the odd and unusual side of the headlines. With that, we now return you to your regularly scheduled programming.
When the rumors are flying, getting the facts matters more than ever. At WFIN, we're your trusted source and will always present the story only after verifying the information with trusted sources. This is WFIN News Director Matt Demchek. Trust in us to present just the facts when covering events impacting Findlay and Hancock County. You can depend on us to get the story right every time on social media, 1330 WFIN, WFIN.com, and at 95.5 FM.
And now, your daily download, the numbers behind the news and the statistics that shape our lives. Do you feel financially stuck? Just kind of stuck, I guess, is the no other way of putting that. A new survey commissioned by the financial planning services firm Zoe Financial finds that 53% of Americans have that feeling. They are financially just kind of stuck. 53%, 36% of those in the survey concerned about paying for necessities and sticking to a monthly budget. These are the concerns that average Americans have these days. 22% say they are worried about their savings strategy or lack thereof. And 21% are stressed over retirement. 77% in the survey say that they would have done something differently in the past that would have improved their financial situation today. Yeah, 77%. I would venture to say that I'm actually surprised that's not even a little higher than that. I think we all have something that we would like to go back and do over in terms of that would put us in a better financial situation today. The average person surveyed said that they didn't take their retirement planning seriously until the age of 38. Despite believing that the ideal time to get serious about it is 29. And again, not a lot of 29-year-olds thinking about retirement, but that's the ideal time, according to the survey. The good news is that younger generations are, in fact, taking steps to prepare for their financial future early on, more so than maybe we did at that age. Gen Zers actively begin planning for retirement at age 25, compared to millennials who started planning at the age of 34. Both are earlier than even older generations. Gen Xers didn't start until 38. Baby boomers waited until age 43. Only 26% of respondents say that they have a financial advisor. And for those who don't have one, the biggest hurdle to hiring one is this misconception that that financial advice and financial success are only for the affluent, which, again, money managers, financial advisors will tell you time and time again, that's not true. 39% of those who have not considered finding a financial advisor believe that they can't afford it, while 24% think that they don't have enough money for it to be necessary. 19% are afraid of getting scammed or taken advantage of by an unscrupulous financial advisor. And this, I thought, was kind of interesting as well. In this day and age of artificial intelligence becoming more prevalent, and again, online you can get these automated financial advisors, People still value the human touch in the financial industry and are not ready to give that up. 37% in the survey said that they would feel uncomfortable relying solely on AI-driven tools to help with their finances and their investments. 58% said that they would prefer real people. Well, the lineup has been announced for this year's Bash on the Bay, the two-day music festival at Put-in Bay that has quickly become one of the marquee events for the Shores and Islands region of Northern Ohio. Tim Neese has been the driving force behind this event since the very beginning in 2017. And Tim, I was reading the story about everything that you had to go through to make that first event happen and how long it took for it all to finally come together. Could you have imagined the way it has taken off over the past several years?
No, I thought it would be a great event for the island. And, yeah, you know, the reason we do it during the week is because there's nothing, not much going on over there during the week, and the weekends, right, we've already got a lot of business. And so when we started, we had to fill out books of stuff with the FAA, which was incredible. The inches of books that we had to go through to get the first one done. And then the FAA, the guys that approved it, ended up coming to the show.
Well, there you go. That's the way, yeah, to convince them. That's the way to convince them. I also thought it was cool, the story of recruiting the headlining acts for those first couple of years to come play at a place that they probably never heard of. But as soon as you got them there, they got it. They grasped the concept right away.
Yeah, when we did Toby Keith, they actually flew his manager out to, I had to pick him up in Detroit at the airport, and we chatted all the way back. He had no idea what Put-in Bay was, and we pulled up to the dock there at the Miller Ferry, and he said, "We're doing this show." And he said, "I don't even need to go over there. We're doing this show." But we did take him over there, and he said, "We are absolutely doing this show."
And the thing is, this has become such a regional event now. You get news coverage from all over Ohio and Michigan. It's really no wonder this has become such an important event from an economic standpoint, even for a region that is already so centered around travel and tourism.
Yeah, and what it did is it created another event on the island that didn't exist, and we have done informal surveys, and we're of the belief that 40 to 50% of the people that come to this show have never been to the island.
Wow. And that's a lot of people, because we're talking about an event that attracts, you know, tens of thousands of people.
Right, exactly. And we had to go through beforehand, back to the startup, we had to figure out how many people we could move an hour with the ferry boats and all of the logistics that go into this thing. Yeah. It's 25 semis that we have to take over on the ferry boat to run this show. So, you know, we had to go through all those steps before we could ever even do one show.
When does that actually start? Because, I mean, obviously getting all of the equipment over there to build the stage, to set up all of the audio equipment and such for the venue, to make it happen. When does that all start?
On Monday of the week of the show,
okay.
Actually Sunday, we start bringing in some stuff, and the stage is actually three semis, that comes out of, comes out of the west part of Illinois.
Okay.
And, we deal with the same, now we've been doing it long enough, we deal with the same people all
sure.
the time.
Yeah. Now it's just kind of down to you've got it all down to a well-oiled machine, but I'm sure in those first couple of years, there were some anxious moments, I'm guessing.
Oh yeah. Yeah. And you know, without knowing and the amount of people, it takes about 500 people to run the show.
Wow.
And, we're pulling people from all over, the local sheriff. We actually go statewide to get enough deputy sheriffs on their days off to come to the island and do what we need, and then private security along with a lot of other stuff.
Yeah. So this year's headliners have been announced. You've got Luke Bryan and Sam Hunt coming August 13th and the 14th. Tell us all about Bash on the Bay 8.
Okay, well, Basin to Bay 8 is part of what we didn't get to do in Basin to Bay 6 when we got our derecho storm on the island.
Yeah.
And we lost Luke that day. We lost the entire show. And so they wanted to come back. We wanted them back. And then every year we want to bring someone new there that hasn't been to the island. So then we latched on to Sam Hunt.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how we got where we're at.
You say you lost Luke Bryan a couple of years ago. You lost the show. You didn't actually lose Luke Bryan. I want to make sure.
Right. Right. But, actually, when I called them at 4 o'clock in the morning and said the show's not going to happen, I was talking to a guy in one of our buses, and they were between Lima and Finley coming up 75. And the guy, the tour manager on the road, the day-to-day manager said, "What the hell is going on up there?" Because all I could see was lightning just nonstop.
Yeah.
And I said, "Stop where you're at."
So how cool is that, though, to be able to get him back, to maybe be able to work within his schedule, and, you know, that he wanted to come back? And, you know, obviously this is a show that is now starting to get a reputation.
Yeah, and it takes months to put all that together. This is not something that we decide a week ago,
right,
to look at Luke. These conversations happen back in September, and you know, you have to build the show with the headliners first, and then you fill it out from there. And the thing with Luke is he has a connection to Northern Ohio. He has relatives up here, and so there's, you know, a lot of times he'll fly in and to a local airport and just a visit with his relatives. So he's already has a connection here.
Very
and,
cool.
So it works out well.
And in addition to the big headliners, Luke Bryan, Sam Hunt, you've got Ashley McBride, Russell Dickerson, and Brett Michaels going to be participating as well. So
yeah, and we had, again, this business is about relationships. We had someone we were looking for a way to pop that show off in a big time on Thursday. And so this person reached out to me and said, "Hey, you know what? Let's talk about doing Brett here." And we ended up getting him.
Awesome. So tickets go on sale Friday. How do folks get those?
eTix.com. There's several levels of tickets, and there's 2-day tickets also. So they'll go on sale at 10 a.m. on Friday. If you're a Luke Bryan Fam Club member, those go on sale Wednesday at 10 a.m.
And like we said, the entire region has really leaned into this. I know Shores and Islands, Ohio is encouraging people to come to the festival, stay maybe even for a few extra days, check out everything else on the island and the neighboring communities. This is, as we said, thousands of people bringing in millions of dollars to Put in Bay and the surrounding area.
Yeah, and what we look at it is, you're exactly right. This is one aspect of a week long trip. You have Cedar Point, you have Kelly's Island, you have all the water parks that are in Sandusky now. So people can actually do, and we do have people do that, that this is a vacation for them now.
Yeah.
Where they're coming. I have a guy from Michigan, that he probably brings 50 people to the island.
Wow.
And he rents a house, and somehow all 50 people are staying in that house. But they're having a good old time.
Maybe we shouldn't say that too loudly. Anyway, Bash on the Bay is happening August 13th and 14th. Again, Luke Bryan, Sam Hunt are the headliners, and tickets, as we said, go on sale to the general public Friday. Tim Neese with us this morning. Tim, thanks very much for taking the time. Here's to a great weekend later this summer.
Thank you very much.
And that will finish up our podcast for today. A quick note, there will be no shows for the rest of the week. Taking a little R&R and catching a few basketball games. The next all-new Good Mornings podcast will be Monday, when we will preview this year's Silver Blades Ice Classic show, Hero Up. So until Monday morning, that is Good Mornings for this morning. Now that you've had a good morning, Go on out, make it a good day, a great rest of the week, fantastic weekend. We'll catch you back here on Monday.